Hello, this is Pamela Curtis. Welcome to the SEI podcast series. We'll be talking to SEI experts on a wide range of subjects from software and systems engineering. Today, we're talking about service-oriented architecture, or SOA, with Paolo Merson and Rick Kottermansky. Paolo is a member of the Software Engineering Institute's technical staff, and Rick is the chief technical officer at SUMA Technologies. SUMA is a Pittsburgh-based IT consulting firm focused on enterprise application architecture, design, and implementation. Paolo and Rick have been researching SOA and recently published an SEI report titled Evaluating a Service-Oriented Architecture. Hello, Paolo.
Hello.
Hello, Rick.
Hello, Pamela.
Thank you for joining us today. Paolo, would you start us out with the basics and tell us what is service-oriented architecture?
The term service-oriented architecture, or SOA, is not new. Gartner first used it back in 1996, and in the past few years, SOA became a buzzword, and there are now many definitions out there. Some of them take the business perspective and say SOA is an approach where business services or business functionality is made available as reusable services. If we take the technical perspective, we can simply say that SOA is an architectural style where systems consist of service users and service providers. In any case, what really defines SOA is the notion of services. So in SOA, a service is a self-contained, distributed component that has a published interface. It stresses interoperability. That means service users and providers can use different languages and platforms. The service is discoverable, meaning there is a directory of directory where the service is registered and service users can look it up. And it is dynamically bound. That is, the service is located and bound at runtime. Now, this is sort of a book definition of SOA. In practice, people build systems that lack some of these characteristics and still call them SOA.
Okay. How does SOA differ from web services?
So SOA is an architectural style. Web services is a technology that consists of several published standards, the most important ones being SOAP and WSDL, or WSDL. And then what's the relation between SOA and web services? Web services is one of the technologies you can use to build an SOA system, but there are other technologies, such as CORBA.
Okay. Rick, how is SOA development similar to or different from traditional software architecture?
At its core, SOA has all of the same challenges we know of from distributed computing that we've learned over the past 15, 20 years. From a technical perspective, widely understood challenge is the integration of components developed in different languages and on different platforms. However, in addition to expertise in languages and platforms, teams now need to have SOA-specific knowledge of standards, products, languages, new architecture patterns, and best practices. Given the broader dependency on shared services, it's also important to consider the operational aspects of systems. These are more critical now than they have been in the past, as there are a greater set of interdependencies between components. Mature SOA architecture approach focuses first on a number of additional design factors that we maybe didn't typically encounter in traditional distributed system designs. We now strive to consider our services or a set of services as if they were products. For example, consumability is key. How a service is packaged, advertised to its consumers, reused across a number of consumers, shared and exposed under its business purposes, impacts how they'll be consumed both inside and probably more importantly over time outside of the containing application. The full lifecycle impact of services on the applications that use those services must also be considered. This includes issues such as the deployment process, how things are shared, how things are versioned, what happens when we migrate that service from one environment to another, and a number of other things more that we don't have time to touch on today. Another aspect of designing services that has emerged over time and is important consideration within service-oriented architecture
First of all, is granularity of the interface. We have to worry about performance and security, and in some cases, something called metering. So we may need to charge for this service, and if the service isn't packaged in a way that makes sense from a chargeback perspective, that's a new design factor that typical distributed systems designers might not have considered. We also think about whether it's suitable for being delivered asynchronously or synchronously to its users, sometimes both, and that affects the design. Another consideration is whether to use it within an ESB or a BPEL-based environment. We'll touch later on what that is and what that means to the design. All of these factors and more dictate design in addition to what we traditionally had to deal with, which is just good object-oriented design principles. In addition to the technical considerations, there are a number of non-technical considerations that the architect must take into account when working with service-oriented architectures. SOA systems are often large-scale systems that involve integration of multiple applications developed by different distributed teams, maybe even in different organizations. So traditional software development concerns, communication, coordination across these teams is a big challenge, and of course documentation becomes very important. SOA enables establishment of a delivery model called software as a service also. So under a SaaS delivery model, consumers don't pay for a license and host it on their premises. Instead, they'll be able to pay for using services by the SIP, as some say, available over the web. In this context, among other things, deployment, versioning are different and vital. Security policies, practices, and other service level agreement issues are different and more significant than ever in SOA versus traditional designs.
All right, thank you. Paulo, how is SOA currently being used?
Many reasons can drive an organization to use SOA. The common denominator is application integration. For example, SOA is often used in the integration with legacy systems. It's also used in many business-to-business contexts. And currently, web services is the technology most commonly associated with SOA. But it's a mistake to think that most implementations of web services integrate systems from different organizations. In practice, a lot of people use web services to integrate systems within the same organization. And by the way, sometimes SOA is overused or misused by IT organizations and software vendors.
What are some of the benefits of using SOA and also some of the drawbacks?
The most prominent benefit of SOA is interoperability, which in turn drives reuse and ultimately cost savings, which is something we're all after. Another thing we're after is agility. We need to move more quickly. The goal of SOA is for software services to interoperate at both a technical level and more importantly, at a business level. For example, today it's much easier, less expensive to integrate Java applications to mainframe systems or a Microsoft .NET-based application. Web services help that, and this is something that's evolved over the past 8 or 10 years. In theory, from a business perspective, with good service-oriented design, proper standards, we should be able to replace a software service provider without rewriting its consumers. It's kind of like plug-and-play with hardware components and how they work with personal computers, a long-time holy grail of the software industry. Still have a lot of work to do to get to that level of interoperability, but it's a good goal. Mm-hmm. SOA promotes the creation of self-contained components that are accessed through well-defined publish interfaces, just like good object-oriented designs. At the integration level, though, the architecture needs to be more loosely coupled. That's a strength. But in reality, because of users of the services being distributed, diverse interfaces and service providers aren't always well designed to take advantage of this, not always well tested. Switching out a service is typically a lot more challenging than vendors may make it sound. You might think of it like today, the power company doesn't need to design the grid to care about whether you plug a toaster into a wall socket or not. Ideally, software services would behave the same way when new consumers began working with them, but we're not quite there yet. Another potential drawback of common SOA design approaches is performance. SOA solutions typically involve data transformations using XML, which adds some overhead. We also may need to allow ourselves to loose coupling, things like proxies, bridges, directory servers, so that we can locate other services and other intermediaries that affect performance. Sometimes architects are naive, and sometimes it's not even known how these intermediaries will affect performance until much of the system is already built. Testability is also problematic because systems are distributed on diverse platforms, owned and managed by different people. Tracing the execution, reproducing a bug is more difficult. Languages, more expertise can also, requirements for more expertise can also create challenges. Security is also a common concern, since we're likely exposing core important business services now over the public internet. The fact that services are easy to consume by client can actually be a detriment to security, as can interoperability. So we need to take extra measures to ensure that service interfaces are secured. In any case, all of these benefits and drawbacks are more or less important depending on the quality requirements for a particular SOA system and why upfront architecture and trade-off analysis, as we discuss in the report, are so vital and important.
Paulo, what are some of the risks associated with SOA, and what approaches to SOA might help mitigate them?
SOA systems often involve multiple languages, platforms, tools, different products, frameworks, and standards. So from the management point of view, a major risk is the lack of skills in the team to cope with this rich and complex environment. From the technical point of view, there are many important design decisions to make, and we know that the cost to fix a bad design is very high once the implementation is in place. So for SOA systems, and actually for any non-trivial system, an architectural evaluation is very important to identify and mitigate the risks early on.
What are, you mentioned important design considerations, what are some of those?
Well, I can start out here, Paulo, but there are many, way too many to cover here, but let's take a crack at a few, and I'll give you a chance as well. For the overall integration among service users and providers, architect may take a direct point-to-point approach or may use something referred to as an Enterprise Service Bus, or ESB for short. ESB is middleware layer that sits between service providers and service consumers and is responsible for routing messages, reformatting them, transforming data, and adaptation to different types of technologies that may be older or incompatible at the surface. For each service user-provider interaction, an architect may also design in different communication approaches to suit the situation. Options typically include SOAP-based web services, proprietary messaging systems, or an approach called REST, which stands for Representational State Transfer. Another design decision for an architect is to decide where to use Business Process Execution Language, or BPEL, product, which is used for process flow orchestration.
Another design consideration is the use of a directory of services. Is it going to exist at all? Is it going to follow the UDDI standard? What exactly will the directory be used for? And also, when designing each service, an important design question is whether the service will be synchronous or asynchronous. And as Rick mentioned before, another consideration is the granularity, finding the right granularity for the design, the service interface. And there are many other design considerations related to security, exception handling, fault recovery, service versioning, and so on. But for all of these design decisions, the right thing to do is to examine the benefits, drawbacks, and the trade-offs of the different alternatives, and then choose based on the quality attribute requirements of the system.
All right. Rick, can you talk a bit about how SOA currently affects our world?
Well, that's quite lofty, but what I see is that despite what many vendors, software product vendors, and talking head analysts will say, much of what an SOA approach considers is really not all that new or all that radical. SOA builds on distributed computing principles and approaches that started in the mid-late 80s, early 90s. What happened, though, is that distributed system technologies of the past, such as the DCE and CORBA, never achieved the broad adoption, interoperability, ease of use, and most importantly, low cost as current web services and related standards do today. The interconnection of systems over the Internet is commonplace. The pace of change is increasing. Our ability to efficiently integrate these applications and business functions within or outside of organizations is now vital to a business. This is, you know, a lot like in the early days of telephones and, you know, later fax machines changed the way that businesses worked on a day-to-day basis. I think SOA will have that evolutionary, not so much revolutionary change and impact on how businesses operate. Hmm. Agility is a key benefit, you know, what we can do today in terms of quickly bringing applications together versus what it might have taken 10 or 15 years ago is a big improvement. SOA puts a high demand now on software architects, though, need to be involved early and have very broad knowledge. SOA opens great opportunities for reuse, but it comes at a price of needing to design an architect up front. If you need a specific piece of functionality in your system, there's an increasing likelihood that you may find it available as a service versus a component, but we're not there yet. There's a long way to go to get to what I believe SOA can provide. Also, all of that said, it's still quite difficult to demonstrate these key benefits such as interoperability and reusability in hard metrics that the business can recognize and see and realize. So we as architects still have a tough job ahead to convince and sell SOA, promote and make successful implementations.
So, Paulo, what kind of change, if any, do you think SOA will bring to software development?
For the software architects, complexity increases, as we mentioned before. So for example, for a single system, they may have to deal with multiple complex frameworks and products, including application servers, ESB products, and people engines. SOA opens a new perspective for business integration. You can define a publicly available commercial service today, and then hundreds of service users can be implemented quickly just by looking at the published interface.
What SOA-related studies has the SEI been doing?
So in 2007, we wrote the report you mentioned at the beginning that we believe is a great contribution to anyone designing or evaluating a service-oriented architecture. That report discusses all major architectural approaches and design decisions involved in SOA. We pointed out some of them today. And different from most published material on the same topic, the report not only describes the alternatives, but also explains the pros and cons of each alternative and the trade-offs involved. In 2006, we wrote another report that explains how different quality attributes are positively or negatively impacted by SOA. And currently, we're investigating service-level agreements for SOA. We'll produce a report that describes what quality properties have been expressed in SLAs and how can they be expressed and what mechanisms can be used to achieve and monitor these quality properties. And the SEI has also developed and has been applying the Service Migration and Reuse Technique. The acronym is SMART. And this technique helps organizations to recast the capabilities of a legacy system as services in an SOA. And there's also a report and a two-day course on SMART already available.
Very good. Well, Paulo and Rick, thank you so much for talking with us about service-oriented architecture. To find out more about SOA, be sure to check out the report entitled Evaluating a Service-Oriented Architecture on the SEI's website at www.sei.cmu.edu/publications. Thanks for listening.